From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 27th day of April 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, Bruce Bostard will be here to take up the agricultural cash grains. He's at the Ludlow Co-op Elevator out of Ludlow, Illinois. As we close out our program, we'll discuss the agricultural weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey. And along the way, we'll hear about the Senate's version of the Farm Bill as reported out of the Ag Committee from not only Dave Dickey, your Director of Agricultural Programming in the newscast, but also with Nick Paulson and Jim Wiesmeyer. You'll want to stay tuned for that as we make our way through this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of the Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on a Friday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. Nearby contract in the May soft red winter wheat at $6.42 and a quarter, up 16 and a quarter. The July futures at $6.50, up 14 and a half cents for the day. September futures $6.62 and three quarters, up 14. Hard red in Kansas City at $6.59, 9 cents higher. From the corn pit back in Chicago, a 29-cent gain settled at $6.53. July at $6.25 and a half, up 18. September $5.51, 2 and a half higher. And December corn at $5.38 and three quarters, up 3 and three quarters. The March futures $5.50 and a quarter, up 3 and a half cents, and May contract at $5.58 and three quarters, up 3 and a half. May beans at $14.96 and three quarters, 15 and a half cents higher. July futures $14.93 and a half, up 13 and a quarter. And the August soybeans at $14.66 and three quarters, up 13 and a half cents. The November contract, $13.62, 3 and a quarter cents higher. Bean meal futures finished the May at $4.27.40, up $7.80. Soybean oil at $55.18, down 19 cents on the day. Live cattle futures in the June contract at $112.85, or 47 and a half cents higher. August up a dime at $115.55. August feeders at $152.07 and a half cents, up 52 and a half, and September at $153.20, up 22 and a half cents for the day. June futures for the lean hogs at $86.60 per 100 pounds, down 82 and a half cents. July at $87.52 and a half, down 95 cents on this Friday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, June contract, $104.84 a barrel, up 29 cents. Ethanol at 219 and 7 tenths, 4 and 3 tenths higher. Natural gas at 218 and 3 tenths. That's up a nickel and 7 tenths. The heating oil or diesel fuel is a penny and a half lower on the day at 317 and 9 tenths. And the gold futures finished $4.40 higher at $1,664 even for a troy ounce. U.S. dollar at 78.72, down 0.19. The CRB index stands for Commodity Research Bureau at 305.50, up 2.2. And the S&P at 1404.4, up 4.5 for the day. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area says that yet this afternoon we'll see partly sunny skies, a high of 59 degrees with an east-southeast wind at about 17 miles an hour, gusting to 24 in the Urbana-Champaign area. Then this evening, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Showers will be likely and possibly heavy after 1 a.m., cloudy and a low of 44 degrees, east winds at 17 miles an hour, gusting to 23. The chance of precipitation for the area set at 70% coverage. Saturday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms before 1 in the afternoon, a slight chance after that. Cloudy with a high of 61 with an east wind at 9 to 17, gusting to 23, 40% coverage on the rainfall. And Saturday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 40. With a northeast wind at 10 miles an hour. Sunday, partly sunny and 59. Sunday night, a 40% chance of showers returns, a low of 43. And on Monday, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Should be mostly cloudy, a high of 67 degrees. Monday night, showers and thunderstorms in 55. The showers and thunderstorms continue during the day on Thursday with a high of 74. And Tuesday, that is. And then Tuesday night, a 61-degree low. Still showers and thunderstorms. They stay with us through Wednesday with an 80-degree mark. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. On the phone line with us here at the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon, Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He, of course, is in West Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, what drove the corn market today?
Well, we finally got the demand to play out. You know, you and I talked about this need to feed the bull, and the demand in corn last week just had not shown itself, even though it was rumored, and we finally got between 2.7 and 2.8 million tons of unknown and Chinese combinations of export demand, and I really drove the spreads back. We got the July D's corn spread back above support of 80 cents. It was up 14 cents today, and the July Nov's bean spread jumped, I think, to a new four-year high and closed up 10 cents at 131.50. So I think the trade also probably after Wednesday's break and testing of support levels, by the time we got to Wednesday, we tested support in beans, we tested support in wheat and corn. Maybe the technicians were also ready to buy on some good news as well. New crop futures didn't want to play along as much. That kind of makes sense given rains on the radar screen and models continuing to show good chances for rain next week and warmer temperatures. But I will have to say a lot of producers have called in this week, and they're about ready to throw the models out the window because they keep showing rain, and then those rains never happen.
Yeah, that's right. It gets drier, and they're not happier when that happens.
No, not this year especially.
I see on that sale via the wire service, it is the largest one-day sale since 1991?
Yeah, and that's what's really got, I think, the trade. You know, obviously the beans have had great news for a long time, and you see that as the South American supplies go down, the Chinese have moved their demand to us. Maybe it's a little bit more sluggish than some of the traders would want, but, hey, you can't take away from the old crop beans rallying sharply and pulling the new crop up with it. But the trade has not seen anything like this in the corn, and it really is especially surprising given USDA's last report and talking about the old crop carryover and new crop supplies coming on early, and also what the Chinese government has said about their old crop corn. So I think this purchase and the fact that the size of this purchase and the fact that the size of the purchase has old crop included in it, Todd, I think this regenerates and reinvigorates the idea and the arguments and the thoughts about what do the government numbers mean in both China and both the United States. And I think that's what we went home Friday thinking was we really have to look underneath the hood of this over the weekend to figure out what's going on in China and what do those USDA numbers mean from last month's report.
And then I see also that Rabobank, and I suppose this is Sterling Liddell, he's there in St. Louis, and maybe we'll try to get him on Commodity Week for next week, managed to lower their ending stocks number for the United States. What they drop it to, 636 million bushel, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, I mean, I'm underneath, but just underneath 700 million bushels for 11-12 corn, and I think there's a lot of people that are expecting 10 to 25 million bushels less on old crop beans because of the rapid pickup in some of these exports. And so here again we see this domino effect. You know, Argentine's grain exchange, I think they did a lot to bring around this trade and maybe did a lot to bring around China to buy, because it was talked about a lot that they went down to 43 million tons on their bean production number, but they went down to 19.8 million on their corn production also, and they're our most vicious and toughest competitor. They've also got some political issues going on in Argentina where they've nationalized a Spanish oil company, and that's starting to get some press. That was actually asked of the Bunge president when he was doing his conference call this week, and that was, I found that very, very interesting that that is being talked about in the grain circles right now. And so that number of 19.8 compares with the USDA number of 21.5, so almost 2 million tons less. That would, about 70%, 75% of that 2 million roughly metric tons, that would be taken off exports, Todd, traditionally.
Right, and so if that happens, then what do we see in the marketplace here?
Well, I think this is where I think that going into the May report, the trade, the way that the bean charts, I've been negative beans, and I still am in the six-month horizon because I think we're rationing demand. I think we've really picked up a lot of new crop acres around the world. But given the constructive charts and given the spread price action this week, I'd be very respectful of beans heading into the May delivery next week and heading into the May report. Once I get past the May report and I see what the commodity trading funds want to do with their, I think, near record long positions. Right now they're 22% long open interest on beans. I think that's bigger than 2007. I think I looked that up about 3 weeks ago and found that was bigger than 07's net long for commodity trading funds. So those three things, I think between now and the May report, will open up a lot more medium-term analysis and say, okay, is it time to get back on the sell side of beans? Can we do that when we're testing that 1395 to $14, $14.10 level, which is would be our chart objective based upon if the July kept on going higher.
May and July both managed to go over 15 bucks on the high side for the day.
Yes, and we closed just below that. And like I said, the charts look very constructive. And I think, you know, part of the reason why the beans probably were pulled back other than the new crop weather was we did see the bean oil give way. That was probably more of a function of the intra-commodity spreading by the products. We saw the bean meal go up, bean meal sell, probably a lot of buying of meal, selling of oil there. Wouldn't take that too negatively because, once again, we saw the meal lead the market higher. As long as we keep seeing that, you want to be really respectful. I think that's the key term I want to say to producers and clients and subscribers is be respectful of beans, pick your battles, jump back out if you see 60, 70-cent chances for a further rally. I do think in the six-month time horizon, we're still rationing demand quite a bit.
Yeah, so meal's the one that's leading this, right?
It is.
Because you look at the weekly chart and or the monthly chart, and meal spiked again this week, and there's a big spike in the monthly chart as well. And that's because Argentina is a primary exporter of bean meal, or maybe their primary export from the soybean products is bean meal rather than oil.
Exactly right, and you've got a tight Malaysian palm oil market as well, and that's adding to the crushing desire as well. Now, one thing that happened here today is we did see the May crush go below close right at 50 cents. July is at 59 cents. August still at 65. So we are starting to hurt the crushing margins after today's rally. So if we continue on this pace of long meal, short oil, and long beans, it's probably going to continue to hurt the crush. That's another big thing, along with the technical momentum.
Okay,
that we'll be watching.
And China's been in the U.S. market to purchase whole beans, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so probably to crush for bean meal, correct?
Correct.
So I'm going to ask you a softball, big bearish question coming up. You ready? So the question is, how quickly do they fill their coffers out of the U.S. supply and then drop out of the bean meal market and not push it higher?
I think it goes back to how does their planting go. I mean, that's where China, by buying so many million metric tons of corn in what would normally be a negative seasonal time period, says to me that their corn crop is not as big, and it goes back and resurrects that issue. And I think the same could be said for the beans, only it's a lot more aged market, and the commodity trading funds have helped push this along. So my take on this is by the time we get to the end of May, we will have bean acres, we will have weather, and we will have the USDA in China putting out new numbers that will probably tell us whether we've done our job of pulling beans away from wheat and barley and oats and corn.
So the story is not written yet.
No, I think that's exactly right. You know, keep in mind, and this is what I want to, you know, really stress on the phone now, that we're in this weather market time period. This is key and crucial that if it's a bullish weather market for corn, it's going to be just nearly as bullish as beans. So you don't want to take away the idea that we can't continue to lose supply and not keep the market going higher. I'm talking about demand rationing. Then if we get supplies back on our side, that's where you look for a big break.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the
day? Yes, I have to say my congratulations to Paul Cooley. His retirement is very bittersweet for me. I'm happy for him and his family, but I will miss him. I'll miss his work ethic, and he's been a great competitor because he's made me work harder.
Thank you so much, Mike, and we'll have Paul on our program tonight for Commodity Week.
Wish him my best. I just am amazed at his understanding of the people he served, and that was the producer, and he took that very seriously, and I hope we all do that.
Indeed he did. You have a great weekend now,
okay,
Mike.
Thanks, Todd.
Mm-hmm. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. You can always hear it again if you'd like on our website at willag.org. Your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, will be here in just a moment with today's Agricultural News.
In agricultural news, the Senate Agriculture Committee yesterday approved the Agriculture Reform Food and Jobs Act of 2012, better known as the Farm Bill, on a bipartisan vote of 12 to 5. As the new Farm Bill moves to the Senate floor, possibly as soon as mid-May, Southern senators and commodity producers are struggling to find ways to protect their safety net. Four Southern Republicans oppose the bill over what they see as inequitable treatment of rice, cotton, and peanuts. The bill makes dramatic changes to the Farm Program safety net. Direct payments, countercyclical payments, and the average crop revenue election program all go away to be replaced with one program that has a $50,000 payment cap for an individual or a $100,000 cap for a married couple. The Labor Department on Thursday announced it would withdraw its proposed rule dealing with children who work on farms and would not pursue its revision as long as President Barack Obama is in office. In a news release, the department said it would withdraw the entire rule. The section dealing with children of farmers who own or operate the farm, and the portion of the rule that would affect neighborhood children and migrant worker children who are employed on the farm. Opponents of Dow AgroSciences LLC's application to move a 2,4-D tolerant corn to market are making a last-minute push to convince USDA to reject the proposal. Bill Fries, science policy analyst with the Center for Food Safety, says that his group would be part of a legal challenge to USDA if it approves the Dow product. Fries says that USDA has done no environmental impact assessment and that there is a real disconnect between USDA and EPA. The anticipated commercial launch for Dow's Enlist weed control system is 2013 for corn, 2015 for soybeans, and 2016 for cotton, pending regulatory approvals. The cow that was recently discovered with mad cow disease through testing in California had been euthanized after it became lame and started laying down at a dairy. USDA also said yesterday that the cow was 10 years and 7 months old in its update on the fourth case of mad cow disease ever discovered in the U.S. Testing at a transfer facility showed the dead Holstein, which was destined for a rendering plant, had mad cow disease. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. That second program will record at 4:30 this afternoon. Our guest, Paul Cooley, on his last appearance as an ADM Investor Services employee. Paul retires at the end of this month, not too many days away. Dan Zwicker will be here as well from ADM Grain Group, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's happening at the world of agricultural commodities, posted to our website by about 6 p.m. Central Time each and every Friday evening. Now, up next, the United States Senate Agriculture Committee, as you already know, has passed a five-year, half-trillion-dollar farm bill. And while the legislation would cut spending by nearly $25 billion, the programs it includes carry with it great budget risk exposure. Budget risk exposure is a phrase that simply means that at face value, the Senate Ag Committee's version of the 2012 Farm Bill looks good on paper, but there could come a time when it blows back on farmers, especially farmers in the Midwest. Jim Wiesmeyer is a senior vice president with Informa and writes a column called Washington Insider. It's safe to say he was appalled by the legislation.
I think it's an easy prediction. I've been watching farm policy for over 33 years, and I'm almost trying to save agriculture from itself, policy-wise. It's a PR disaster in the making, but some groups are just getting a little greedy here from the farm a policy perspective.
Wiesmeyer made his comments the day the legislation was reported out of the Ag Committee on a public radio program called Commodity Week from the University of Illinois. I happen to host that program. Nick Paulson, a farm policy specialist in the Agricultural College at Illinois, agrees the budget risk exposure is a problem.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the big danger. And this is something that, that a lot of us as agriculture economists have been talking about, that, you know, for example, the direct payment program, from a PR, agricultural PR perspective, is kind of really taken a bad rap. But it is a program where there is limited exposure in terms of expenditures, because we know exactly what that program will cost. From a trade perspective, it's much more accepted, or potentially much more accepted than some of these more risk management, revenue risk management programs will be, in the event that we have lower prices or something that could lead to potentially very large payments.
Now, therein lies the political quandary. The United States has a vested interest in making sure an adequate food supply is available for the population. The Farm Safety Net tries to make sure there are farmers to produce that food by leveling out income from one year to the next. You know, farmers don't really like direct payments because they look like a government check for, well, just being a farmer. To be clear, they are. On the other hand, producing farm programs that protect farm income when needed is difficult, and creating one taxpayers will not see as greedy, well, that can be even more problematic. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
This is the Closing Market Report. It is Friday afternoon. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company on the phone line to take up the agricultural cash grain markets. Many calls about corn today, Bruce?
Quite a few.
I bet. So what are they asking?
What's happening on the nearby corn? What's going on here? And
do you have good explanations?
I think we had some, we had confirmation of some of the rumors of export sales business, so once we didn't get a buy the rumor, sell the fact.
Mm-hmm. And did producers take advantage of this to move old or new crop corn?
A little bit of both out there. One thing on the old crop is that we've popped back into and hit some levels that look pretty decent during the day, but it's not new highs, whereas on soybeans we're seeing new highs. So a little more enthusiasm may be there.
And did they make new crop sales for soybean?
Yes. Relatively limited on everything, but we're seeing some new crop sales come on.
The right thing to do, in your opinion?
If you're getting started, I probably don't want to be carried away, because we have so much relying on both our new crop soybean with a limited carryout and not as many bushels coming out of the southern hemisphere, and they're being tight holders, and on getting their crop in this fall. So with those, I don't mind having some sold. I don't want to go nuts on it.
Turn to new crop corn pricing and basis, please.
New crop basis has been dead steady. We're seeing some selling in there. I think if I could get an inch of rain on what's in the ground on corn, I would probably see some additional new crop selling.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are at 646 on nearby corn, 511 on new crop, beans 1483 and 1330.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. I'll be back in just a couple minutes when we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It's National Prime Rib Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1773, the British Parliament passed the Tea Act, one of the events that led to the American Revolution. In 1865, Cornell University was chartered. Cornell is an agricultural land-grant university endowed by Ezra Cornell, one of the founders of the Western Union Telegraph Company. In 1898, the first Weather Bureau kite was launched from Topeka, Kansas. And by the end of the year, 17 kite stations were attempting to collect daily weather observations. The box kites were 8 feet long, 7 feet wide, and 3 feet high. In 1902, Julius Sterling Morton died. He was the founder of Arbor Day, first observed in Nebraska on April 10, 1872. Over 1 million trees were planted. He was a strong supporter of forestation and spent his life conducting agricultural experiments on his estate. From 1893 to 1897, he served as Secretary of Agriculture under President Grover Cleveland. And in 2004, Roy Walford died. An American pathologist, he pioneered the idea of restricting food intake to extend lifespan. His research in the 1960s on mice showed that restricting their caloric intake by about 40% resulted in nearly doubling the lifespan of mice. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason, and we're joined on the phone line now by Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey, the Prairie Research Institute right here on the U of I campus. Jim, thanks so much for taking the time with us. When I look across the forecast for the National Weather Service for the coming week, it looks as if there could be quite a little bit of rainfall. What do you see?
That's right, Todd. The latest forecast from the National Weather Service is looking a little more optimistic. You know, we've kind of been struggling with dry weather so far in April, and they've got pretty much a chance of rain pretty much every day from Saturday all the way at least through next Tuesday or thereabouts. And the amount of rainfall is actually been increased in the last couple of model runs. So it looked pretty sparse a couple of days ago, but now it looks like they're a little more generous with the amounts. We may see some amounts up to 2 inches or more across the central part of the state. There's kind of this band of rains up through Oklahoma and Missouri and into central Illinois that probably be the heaviest amounts. And so that would be welcome to get some rain and maybe finally catch up, because we have been running behind on rainfall in April so far.
And take me through those numbers, because I'm sure you've looked at them.
Yes, if we look at the forecast, we've got for tonight, it's low of 44, and they've got a 70% chance of rain, then a 50% chance of rain tomorrow of the high of 61. Saturday night's another 30% chance of rain, and low about 40, and then we get into Sunday a little sunnier and high of 59, and then we go into Saturday night, and it's low of 43, and you get on in next week, we see highs in the 60s and 70s and lows in the 50s there with a chance of pretty good chance of rain on Monday night and Tuesday for rain. So I think it looks a little more promising for rainfall.
As we close out the month of April, look back at it, how did we fare?
Yes, if we look at April as a whole, we've kind of got a little bit of a statistical oddity going on here. We've right now, the latest numbers are we're at 54.5 degrees, which is about 3 degrees above normal. So we're actually ending up on the warm side. But because March was so warm, at we had the statewide average temperature was 55 degrees, so it actually beat out April. So we had a warmer March than we did April. That is extremely rare. That's only happened once in the historical records for Illinois. So very unusual for that kind of a thing to work out.
What year did it happen?
That was in 1907.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Way, way back.
Way back. It was a way back year. I was afraid you were going to tell me it was 88 or something funny like that.
Yeah, no.
All right. Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Thanks so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
Jim Angel is at the Illinois State Water Survey and the Prairie Research Institute, serves as the state climatologist, joined us on the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. Don't forget to tune in for Commodity Week on many of our radio stations. You can always hear it online if you'd like. Tonight, after about 6 o'clock, we'll post it to the website. Our guests will be Paul Cooley and Dan Zwicker. And Dwayne Nelson, Paul Cooley will be retiring, of course, so it will be his last appearance on Commodity Week. It's up on willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.